So the first recorded presence of Jews on British soil is almost immediately after the arrival of William the Conqueror. There has been a Jewish presence across Europe, of course, since pre-Christian times, because they were part of the Roman Empire and as such travelled. And we certainly know that there was a Jewish presence, permanent Jewish presence, in Greece, particularly North Africa, as well as beyond what would be considered modern day Israel and historic Israel. But they don't come this far west until they are invited in as part of the people following in from William the Conqueror. And they are invited in very, very clearly and very obviously to do with the fact that they had by that time established a tradition within Europe, a lot of the time to do with finance. Now, the downside of that is that people automatically assume the context of usury, money lending, and that's often the trade that they are most associated with. But actually, it was finance generally, and there's a very good reason for why Jewish communities were involved with finance at that time. And part of that is the simple fact that a Jewish man, by the simple need to be bar mitzvahed, was literate at a time when many, many peoples across Europe had no idea of what reading and writing was. So here is a group that are literate and require literacy as part of who they are. That in itself makes them much more able to be involved with finance. Also, in addition to that, is the simple fact that as a nation who are dispersed and trade and move around, finance is something that they're going to have picked up. Anybody who comes from a commercial background, of which Jews are at that period, often means they're going to have some kind of financial involvement. And finally, the other reason is that as Jews had spread across the Christian world, they had been often prevented from being involved with other trades. And they had been prevented from owning land in certain areas and trading in certain practices, which reduced the opportunities for them. And so you end up with a situation where many of those Jews who are able to travel do so because they are involved with elements of finance. And so that is ultimately why you see a Jewish arrival into Britain just after 1066. Now, those early years within Britain are relatively settled. They are protected by the king to some degree. Nonetheless, the Christian tradition itself has accusations against Jewry. But we have plenty of records that also say that although things were said and there was this anti-Judaism in certain parts, relations between Christians and Jews was relatively successful in certain areas, and certainly some of the wealthier Jewish communities were contributed enormously to the wider communities in which they lived in. What started to make things different again was this issue of money when people started to borrow and couldn't pay back, and that was predominantly the lower and middle aristocracy in the UK, or what was then England. And then you see the accusations against Jews start to emerge as a way of blame because nobody wants to pay a debt. How many of us to this day and age usually have very good things to say about the tax man? So that's that kind of attitude that starts spreading. You also have, very importantly, the coming of the Crusades. And the Crusades build up this fervour of anybody who is not a Christian is somehow our enemy. And you start seeing this fervour is whipped up. We know that various parts of the Crusades, as they go march across Europe towards the Middle East, do attack Jewish settlement, and we start seeing those kinds of attitudes emerge within the UK. In particular, there's two most famous elements of that within the UK is in 1144 with the accusation of the blood libel in Norwich, and that accusation is where the Jews of Norwich are accused of murdering Christian children to use that blood in order to make their leavened bread for Passover. Now, obviously, in this day and age, we think what a ridiculous kind of statement. What is amazing is how that particular accusation spreads across the Christian world to the point where to this day, in the 21st century, so 1,000 years later, you can still go to record and go to communities, not in the UK, but certainly in other parts of Europe. There are communities who believe, not necessarily that in this day and age, Jews still go out and murder Christian children for their blood, but there are, you will meet people who will say, but they used to. And that's quite remarkable, because obviously it is utterly unfounded, it is utterly rubbish. And yet, an accusation that starts all those years in 1144 travels through hundreds of years, across continents even, and has power that actually reaches very, very importantly through to the 20th century. And we see elements of that blood libel, the imagery of that blood libel, reintroduced for modern Nazism and the modern anti-Semitism that heralds in the Holocaust. So it's incredible to think that that one accusation, which was all about blaming a community because of a financially bad debt back in 1144, that it was there purely to discredit people, ends up with this enormous amount of power. And that's quite frightening. It was particularly frightening if you think of then the status of Jews within the UK. And that libel spreads very, very quickly. And it is really a forerunner for some of the horrible things that then happen over the next decades within the UK, culminating, of course, with riots in London, Lincoln, and probably the most famous in 1190 in York, where the Jewish community of York is massacred at Clifford's Tower. They are herded into Clifford's Tower, which is still in central York. You can go there now. Tower is got people around it who are there baiting for blood. I mean, this is a medieval crowd. They are baiting for blood. They are going to get their blood. Many of the community, the Jewish community, have gone into the tower, men, women, children, elderly, commit suicide. Those that don't are killed, and there is this fire and destruction. It's probably one of the most famous massacres in UK history, partly because of its brutality and because, of course, like all the attacks on the Jewish community at that time, it comes out of nowhere, and it comes out of a person in a town with a bad debt who doesn't want to pay it back, and the best way of not paying it back is to have that community no longer there. In 1218, one of the archbishops in Britain, or the Bishop of Britain, insists on the fact that Jews within Britain are required to wear a badge. This is a patch they must have sewn on their clothes. Again, a terrible thought to think that here is something that happens, you know, in the 13th century that is reintroduced centuries later into the 20th century, and even more terrifying, I think, for many Brits who realise that they have no idea that, you know, many of these formulations start within our own history, and they do. Things get worse and worse. If you look at the record, you will see a mixture between some Jewish communities who do very well and their local population is going well, but again, if anything bad happens, they are often blamed. And they're blamed not just by those with a bad debt, they've also become the cause for blame for much of the clergy. And Easter in particular becomes a terrible time, because at Easter, where they are accused, the Jews are accused of deicide, essentially they're accused of the death of Christ, it is quite common to go into the streets and to stone the houses where Jews live. And this, by this time, this is not a practice purely in Britain at all, this is a practice across the whole of Europe where there is Jewish settlement. But needless to say, the relationship, therefore, between the communities is getting more and more uncomfortable. In 1290, Edward I, the King of England, decides that he will simply banish the Jews from settlement in England. According to the record, he had found finance from elsewhere. He had no need for the Jews. He saw that this would make him seem as a good person with the eyes of the Christian church, because he is simply banishing their presence. So from 1290 onwards, there is no Jewish presence officially within the UK. And that does not change until 1656. Now, what we do know, of course, is that during that period, we have great writings by the likes of Shakespeare, who has these Jewish characters. And we have other documents that suggest that there may not have been an official presence in the UK or in England, but there are certainly Jewish merchants coming into London. They are just not necessarily settling openly within within England. But again, to return to Shakespeare, the fact that when the Shakespeare writes his plays, with particular his very famous Jewish characters, that character of the Jew is recognised by the audiences of London. And that also suggests that although there might not have been a physical presence of Jewry, there was certainly this legacy within tradition and colloquialism which had remained 350 odd years. And potentially, certainly within London circles, some members of foreign Jewry.